Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, you're in the Western Conference Finals.
I'm stunned. I don't know what to do with the world at this point. I'm very confused at this new reality. We've stumbled into a strange new world, Zach, and I am both excited, titillated, and afraid of it.
Well, Tony Allen said that today is a Benihana day, so that should put things in perspective for you.
Put things in perspective. The Marc Gasol quote about Pulp Fiction is probably much my favorite thing about the internet.
That was pretty fun.
That's absolutely incredible. I love that scene. I love that character. Everything about it. It's really, it's odd. Because, and I've got a lot of Memphis people mad at me. Because, like, yeah, I pull for the team. And yeah, I'm excited. But I can't do my job and be the guy that I am on Twitter and not say, it's Russ.
Well, right, yeah.
It's just Russ.
They could have beaten the Thunder even if Russell Westbrook was playing, but that's an entirely different series.
Would they have been favored? No.
No.
Would they have closed all these close games late? No. Like, they just wouldn't. It would not have occurred.
I still think that they can win that series. I would have picked the Thunder to win that series.
Yeah.
But if you had told me, hey, the Grizzlies are going to win in six, I wouldn't have been like, oh, that's ridiculous.
You know, could and did are not the same.
Right.
That's a big deal.
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, like, look, we kind of got lucky that Russell Westbrook got hurt, but this is still fun.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. And, you know, I was talking to a beat reporter for another team last night. And I was talking to him about he was saying like how it's he's like, you know, they're really just here because of the Westbrook injury. And I was like, yeah, I was like, but you know, I can look back and look at so many teams that their window opened because of something like that. It just, this is the league and it sucks, but that's part of it,
right?
Just,
and it's not their fault,
no.
You know, like they have to play the opponents that get put in front of them, and they did that, and it like. I always hate that argument. It's yes, the, like, I went through this kind of with the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves could have won the championship in 2004, but Sam Cassell got hurt. They're like, well, yeah, that's the only reason the Lakers beat them. I was like, well, no, the Lakers were a really good team. They probably could have beat them even with Sam Cassell there. I would have liked their chances, but you can't blame the Lakers for getting there because of an injury. You can't blame the Sixers had no business being in the second round last year, but Derrick Rose got hurt. That changes things. It's not their fault Derrick Rose got hurt. It's not the Grizzlies' fault Russell Westbrook got hurt. They have to play who's in front of them.
I acknowledge that it's maybe not fair because of how, well, we talked about this yesterday, but I don't think it's fair that this has occurred because of the way that LeBron was treated and the way Melo will be treated and has been treated.
Yeah.
I am a little happy that so many people had the sentiment on both website coverage and Twitter seems to be very much in the vein of let's not blame KD. Let's, you know, he had a bad game. It was an impossible task. He couldn't do it. There doesn't seem to be a lot of choking, choker, choke, you know, I don't know what's the artichoke salt baby version of KD? Is
that, oh, like, God. Like
ugly fruit.
String bean salt baby. Is it like snow peas?
Snow peas. I bought an ugly fruit yesterday but for the first time, by the way.
Okay.
I don't know what to do with it or how to fix it. But
I think you just throw it off the roof.
Gnaw the remains off the concrete.
Yeah,
there.
I think that's the typical traditional way of eating that.
So, you know, I do think he had a miserable series. Just miserable, miserable series. Last three games, Kevin Durant, 50-40-90, shot 36-44-67.
Yeah.
The free throws were boggling.
That's where, I mean, that's where I think, like, he's just exhausted. Yeah. From having to do everything for 45 to 48 minutes a night, like, he was just exhausted. Because he's not a guy that, I mean, he's an 88.4% free throw shooter for his career. Like, for him to go 67% over a three-game stretch is kind of ridiculous.
So, do they need to do anything going forward, or do you just we forget this miserable offseason or this miserable playoffs ever happened, and we keep going with the plan.
For the Thunder?
Yeah.
No, they're fine.
Well, I know that they're fine. I don't think any drastic changes are necessary. My question is, like, is there anything you would like to see them do?
Or I'd like to see them get rid of
this team as constructed is...
They need to get rid of Kendrick Perkins. He's awful. Like, we need to stop pretending that his personality is going to overcome whatever. Like, I'm sure he adds a veteran presence, and he keeps them thinking they're tough and all this crap, but he is the bane of their existence on the court.
Negative .07 PER in the playoffs.
He shot 19% or something like that.
There's no way to get around the numbers. He just can't.
There's no way to sugarcoat it. I think he went 1-for-4 last night, and that raised his shooting percentage for the series. He's awful. Like, he's really bad, and it's not his fault he has this contract, but he has the contract. I'd like to see them amnesty. It's not going to put them in a position to sign a free agent or any, you know, a big free agent or anything like that. But it's just, you have to get away from, I mean, they clearly can't not play him. Like, they don't have that ability. They feel like they have to play him. And you have a better option. You can go Ibaka, Collison, and then go get another a reserve big man or something. Like, there's so much they can do. That's the only thing. Like, if they keep Kevin Martin for whatever, like $8 million a year or whatever, I'm fine with that. I think he's a good complement to Durant and Westbrook, but they both have to be out there. But this was a team that seemed fast-tracked to the finals, and then their second-best player, who happens to be like the fifth-best player in the league, went down, and they couldn't adjust on the fly. Like, I don't see anything wrong with this team. And they've got a bunch of assets. They got Jeremy Lamb, who I'm not big on, but they can develop. They've got Toronto's pick at, I think it's around 12, depending on what happens with the lottery. They've got a lot of flexibility. They can move Perry Jones. Like, they just have a lot of flexibility.
Would you rather see – so I'm going to throw out three names for you for a free – let's say the amnesty Perkins.
Okay.
I'm going to throw out three names for you for them to pursue as a center, okay?
Okay.
And you can use them as either a reserve behind Collison or starting.
Okay.
Samuel Dalembert, Ivan Johnson, Brandon Wright.
Ivan Johnson.
Interesting.
Because I think you have to play him in a reserve role. And you still get the toughness that you loved with Perkins. Like, he doesn't have the championship pedigree unless he scared the Korean League into giving him a title. I don't remember what happened there. But he has the toughness that you want from Perkins. He's not good enough to start. He's good enough to play 15 to 18 minutes off the bench for you. I think that keeps you in check with what you want to do and still brings to the table what you like.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. And now I'm kind of like looking at the free agents. I'm kind of like, you know, this could work. Like, they could make a substantial upgrade if they amnesty Perkins and get a free agent. Like, there's a lot of guys out there I like for them.
Right? Ivan Johnson, I would much rather have him than Perkins. And I do think Perkins can be a decent player in that Boston Celtics setting.
Go back to Boston.
But they don't. Yeah, exactly. They don't have that. Like, they have a different mentality. They don't have that Boston Celtics team.
This is not, it would have made a difference, because I know your feelings on Jeff Green. Had the trade never occurred, which they needed to make, I'm talking about this specific series, let's say the trade had simply not worked out, and they hadn't been able to pull the trigger on it, would having Jeff Green in this series have helped?
That's weird. I mean, are we just pretending everything else happens the exact same way?
We're pretending. Okay. I realize it's a bad
comparison. I mean, yeah, he's a much better player than Kendrick Perkins. It would help, but I don't know. Well, for what they needed to do, it comes down to if he hits 3-point shots, because they really needed someone to stretch the floor to give space for Durant. And so if he hits threes in the series, then yeah, I mean, he's obviously going to hit threes over Kendrick Perkins, but I don't know that he was consistent enough. But it definitely doesn't hurt them as much as having Perkins on the floor.
Zach Randolph is a man.
He's
a man.
You know what? I think he'd beat me in an arm wrestling contest.
He might get that arm.
I think he might.
Like, there are various things. Like, if you had like a menu of things that I could of inconsequential things, being able to win an arm wrestling contest, I would probably take.
Yeah.
Not even for the fact that, like, then you would, like, let's say that you still had the same level of arm strength, but you could just win an arm wrestling contest. I would still consider taking that of a number of options.
Sure. Yeah. Well, plus I'd love, I mean, Over the Top's one of my favorite movies.
Well, there you go. Yeah, he just a monster. And then, God, he missed those free throws. I should have really taken a photo of what my face looked like. Because I knew it was coming. And so, like, I'm slumped down in the couch. My couch has as I always call it, a chaise. It has a chaise on it. And so I'm stretched out on the couch with my laptop up. And I'm chewing on my shirt because I'm so nervous. And my eyes are in this wide look of horror. And, like, I took, like, a mental picture of what I thought my face looked like, and I was like, oh, God.
This was just a great fake. When Durant does that over-the-top rip fake to get Tony Allen to overplay his right, and he pulls in a couple of feet and gets that jumper, as he's releasing that jumper, what are you thinking?
Where's a trash can?
Because he made
that. My wife's gonna be pissed when I vomit all over this couch.
Because he, it looked like he had nothing, and then he does that great fake. Tony Allen is over aggressive, which I agree with playing that way. I think you have to, if he does try to go right, you've got to knock him off that path. And Allen would have done that, but it left that middle wide open, and he got into the middle of the defense, and he pulled up for the jumper, and it was fairly uncontested. And I just thought, here we go. This is the shot he needs to hit. And he didn't, and I'm not going to read anything into that other than he missed the shot. But I was pleasantly surprised that that was the shot they got. And he
missed that.
I know, shocking. And Royce wrote about it, and I think Scott Brooks said something after the game, like, I'll take that shot. I'll live with that shot 100 times out of 100. It was a great shot. It was a great move and a great shot.
Yeah, everything about it was perfect. Mighty Casey struck out.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to, you know? And, you know, again, now, of course, I had the exhilaration of last night celebrating with Memphis fans, and that was fun. But then, of course, you know what the next thing that happened with my brain was?
You start having nightmares of Steph Curry?
Well, not really that. I just kind of accept Steph Curry right now at this point. Like, Steph Curry is just like, It's like anything that's unfair that happens to you in life. They just had to take four extremely tough nail biter games out of the Thunder, who looked like crap without Westbrook.
Yeah.
Oh God.
But isn't that how they win games?
It is.
It's all ugly.
That's what kind of like makes me. It kind of makes me feel better, but there's still that part of me that's so. I mean, and so I've kind of like, you know what? I'm like, you know what? They made the Western Conference Finals, and for most teams, I tend to say you need to dream bigger than that. Look, the NBA is extremely competitive right now. The Grizzlies have a very small window with this core. They made it to the Western Conference Finals. I'm just going to be happy.
Yeah,
like I'm just. The window's open. They've pushed this way through. If they lose to the Spurs, it's because the Spurs are a phenomenal team. If they lose to the Warriors, it's because of God. So I don't know what to do. You know, I'm just going to be happy that it's happening. I'm going to enjoy going to Memphis to see a city that's really going to be on fire for a team that's giving them an opportunity to give them something to root for. I'm going to be excited for this opportunity for all the guys on that team. I do think it's interesting because there's been this talk of like, oh man, like look at John Hollinger now, and I love John. John is one of the coolest guys I've ever met. It's what drives me nuts is people act like he's this cold, unthinking nerd. And if you meet John,
oh my God, like, he's just so much personality.
He's so nice.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's just incredibly nice. John didn't have a lot to do with this roster. Like Chris Wallace is the guy that built the roster, and Chris Wallace. There's a lot of things you can say about Chris, but. You know, he built the roster. They took away Gay, and they added Tayshaun and two players that aren't playing right now, but the rest of that is Wallace.
No, but I think that was a tough call to make. Financially, it was a smart call, but that's a tough call to sell, clearly, as we saw on the internet.
Yeah.
And it was sometimes it's hard for a front office to make that kind of a move.
I'm more impressed with Para for being able to say, well, no, I don't even know about
that. I think if you're talking about John Hollinger, I think you're talking about the collective front office and just using him as the face of it, right?
It's funny because I want to be like, you know, I'm actually more like, oh wow, look at Robert Pera for having the guts to make that kind of decision. Then I realized, yeah, ballsy Robert Pera not having to pay Rudy Gay the rest of his $8 million owed for the rest of the year.
Right.
Like, what a bold move by him to pay less.
Yeah, like, hey, Mr. Pera, we've got a, you know, we got to make a trade. You're going to save a lot of money on this. What do you think? God, I don't know.
I just paid $370 million for a franchise that's in the red. So, I know that you were hoping for KD to catch fire because you didn't want to let go of him.
Yeah, I love, even when he was struggling, I love watching his game. I mean, then there's some analysis for you, but it's just, he's one of those guys where once he leaves the playoffs, like, I don't think we realize what a talent necessarily we're not getting to see, even when he struggles. I mean, he shot the ball horribly last night, and still, it was fun to watch.
So, you know, it's funny because we're talking about Andrew Wiggins, and there's the idea of what if he's Michael Beasley and all these things that he could be, and he could be. He could, like, these kids flame out. I do believe that there are exceptions. There are kids that you see and you go, holy crap. That just if you're able to recognize it, now that's confirmation bias, because when you say that it doesn't happen, you don't remember it.
Right.
I saw Kevin Durant in college. I was living in Austin, Texas, doing a lot of drinking. That night I wasn't drunk, though, when I went to see my Missouri Tigers play the Texas Longhorns. And I went to...
For those who don't know, Missouri Tigers used to be a college sports program.
Yeah, formerly. the former athletic program, Missouri Tigers. So I was at the Frank Irwin Center, and I watched Kevin Durant in a college game drop 35 on my Tigers. And I turned to my buddy who I went with to the game with, and I was like, that kid's going to be an NBA Hall of Famer. I was like, I am 100% sold. And he was like, okay, as long as you're not jumping the gun, that's, you know, good job not overreacting. But I believed it the whole way, and I said that he needed to be the number one pick over Odin, and which is not to disparage Odin at all. Everything I've ever seen from Kevin Durant was, holy crap, that guy is amazing. His personality, he's the guy that you want. Royce had a fantastic thing that he wrote last night on CBSSports.com about how this is tough, but that Kevin Durant needed it. This is like the real challenge for him now.
Yeah.
That losing the finals, it was still gravy because they were so young, and now this is the first real struggle. And to see how he responds from this is going to be really fascinating.
What I don't think people really get that is that, you know, he loses and he can't carry his team to a second round win. And people are like, oh, see, I mean, there are plenty of people who are saying, oh, shouldn't we start killing him for this? He's, you know, screwing up.
Mostly Melo fans.
Right. But it is happening. And it's a dumb, like, knee-jerk reaction that we do to, like, tear guys down. But it's... This is a great experience for Kevin Durant. Like, seeing a young guy who's supposed to have it all, like Monte Ellis, who have it all, but seeing a young guy who's supposed to have it all and fail like that in such an overwhelming fashion, like, that's really when you get to see what the guys are made of. And for the majority of guys like Kevin Durant and LeBron James and, you know, Derrick Rose and all the young players, we saw it with Kobe Bryant, like, this is something that they have to go through. And it's, you know, it in the moment it sucks, but we're going to look back on it and be like, yo, that was a great thing for Durant to go through. Like, look at all the growth he's had since that point. And he's already grown immensely as an NBA player.
I have a fear that is not driven by anything logical, because fear is illogical, but I have a concern based off of past history with the Thunder. It's not about Kevin at all. I don't think there's like Kevin's going to respond from this. He's going to work harder. He's going to be better, which is terrifying to watch. Like, yeah. He's going to be amazing. He's going to be so much better, and it's going to be absolutely incredible. You're going to be like, how did he get better? But when in 2008, about the idea was the Blazers were going to be this contender for like 7 years because they had this young core and they were already having so much success, and then it imploded. And that's one instance. there have been so many times when a team has made a step and then couldn't get through. And I wrote about it in the preseason or in the pre-playoffs preview for the Thunder, the road to the finals. I said, you know, you either get through and you win the championship or you regress. That's their only two options right now because they've improved every single year. And that regression can have a negative impact sometimes. And it's also just a matter of sometimes luck is just cruel.
Like, sure.
Basketball gods, fate, whatever, is just cruel. And we can't predict that. We can't see it. But I am of the opinion. I'm not like 100%, oh, they're definitely going to win a title because I'm like, man, sometimes stuff just falls apart.
Yeah.
If you don't get there, it just falls apart. Now, I think that the way that Oklahoma City has built their program, not just their team, but their program, with the idea of staying true to what they do, and they always talk about staying true to, you know, their focus and the process and all of that, I don't think that there's going to be a problem. I honestly do believe – I used to think that Westbrook eventually was going to flip out and want his own to be a star. I don't believe that anymore. I really think that Russell kind of understands what the position that he's in because he is a smart dude. And I think he's going to understand the benefit that he has in playing next to Kevin. And so I think that they're going to be – as long as they got those two guys, they're going to have a chance every single year. I think it's – this playoffs are remarkable because – the Nuggets couldn't win with a team approach, and then having one star and having to have one star carry the load isn't working great for the Thunder, which is not their fault, or the Knicks. It's like a real. It's almost like you need both. Like you need to have a good team with a star.
Yeah, it's almost like it's really hard to advance in the playoffs.
It's almost like that in an extremely competitive NBA setting.
Right. It's weird when you get the most concentrated talent in one sport together in a grinded out, like the series approach is so much harder than the one-off, you know, approach. And it's weird how that kind of brings out the cream to the top, you know?
Yeah. Bulls, goodbye.
Yeah, feel bad. I mean, just feel bad for them. Like, what are they supposed to do? They're way too injured. Even if they hadn't been injured, it probably isn't enough.
I wrote a thing to kind of give them, you know, to give them credit, because I really did believe that for them to walk into Miami twice and give them the fight that they did in games one and five, it just takes a level of professionalism that honestly, this is part of it, is a lot of these teams in the NBA that don't make the playoffs, they're not in the playoffs, not because of their talent level, it's because they don't have that level of professionalism.
Right.
And that comes down to coaching and the program and the superstar and a whole bunch of factors, but that's really one of the differences is you knew that the Bulls were not going to go down with that fight. Now, when they were up like seven, I was like, oh, God, not another game of this. Oh, God, I can't take another game of this.
It was a point where I was like, they went up seven, and I thought, Chicago, I really respect you, but you have got to stop. This is enough.
I just kept thinking, you know, I was thinking of it originally about the OKC game last night, because I obviously wanted the Memphis Grizzlies to win, but I kept thinking of that Pulp Fiction scene where he's like, that's pride, effing with you. Like, don't listen to pride. F pride.
It's people are starting to kill Tibbs throughout the series because of the injuries, and he runs guys into the ground.
Because he's a sadist?
And there is something to that, but that team doesn't put up the fight they do without everything he does. Like, he has a system. I don't know if that system is going to be detrimental to certain players over the course of their career, but this is his one way of coaching. And this is his one way of thinking, like, you need to try. Like, I don't care that we're up 20 with 4 minutes to go. Like, you need to finish this game. You need to destroy it. And that heightens the injury risk for sure, but it ingrains this sense of like almost this inability to let up, which with Miami, now Miami's a lot more talented and they have arguably a better system on both sides of the ball, but Miami has this tendency to let up when you want them to step on the throat. Like, Chicago never does that. Now, Chicago may not have the talent to overcome the talent disparity and end up winning a title with this system, but there is something to be said about instilling that kind of mentality in your team and in your organization.
One of the things I thought of, because I mean, I've worried about this from Tibbs for a long time. Basically, there are so many coaches that go so hard on their players and eventually get tuned out, but they haven't. But that's kind of, you know, self-confirming prophecy.
Right.
The bigger thing to me is this: look, these aren't 20-year-olds that he's doing this to. Joakim Noah survived Scott Skiles. That's where he came in.
Yeah.
He had to break his way out from under Ben Wallace, that was a huge thing for me in my first year of blogging, was why in God's name is Ben Wallace starting when Joakim Noah is awesome? So he knows his way around. Lou Aldang has been in the league a long time. He knows his way around. These guys know. And they choose not – because they could be like, nope, I can't go. My hamstring hurts. I'm out.
Yeah.
And they choose to go knowing what they're going to have to do. And honestly, they choose to stay in the game for as long as they do. I think honestly, if Lou Aldang was to be like, I need to sit down, that probably Tibbs would be like
– oh, yeah. Oh, he absolutely would. And that's the thing. He gets these guys to buy in, and they choose to buy in. And that's we see a lot of guys bang heads with coaches, try to get traded or try to get the guy fired. That doesn't happen here, except for, you know, maybe Richard Hamilton after his comments. But that doesn't happen in Chicago. And getting guys to buy in and to continue to choose to buy in, that's huge. Like, that says a lot. Now, you can disagree with the style, but that doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means you have a different opinion than Thibodeau.
So props to them. First I was irritated when they, as long as they win, I don't care. It's like annoying and yet kind of admirable, I think, that Miami seems to me to very much be like, screw around for two quarters, still win the game.
Yeah.
Like, why bother trying?
Well, I wrote about last night of, we've seen that they can respond, but can they avoid adversity? And sometimes for a great team, you have to be able to avoid it. And I don't know that they have that ability. Now, it might not matter, because if you keep responding to adversity, you can still win a title. But and they have the talent, they have the best player in the world, and they've got a great system and a great coach. But against the Pacers, they won't have that luxury. And then if they face the Spurs or the Grizzlies or the Warriors in the finals, they're not going to have that luxury. Like, the margin of error keeps getting smaller and smaller as you go deeper into the playoffs. And I wonder if that mentality will come to bite them. I don't think they're going to lose in the Eastern Conference Finals, regardless of who they play. I'm sorry, I left out the possibility that the Knicks win the series, which that assuredly will happen. But it does worry me a little bit. I don't doubt that they have a killer instinct and all that crap, but I wonder if they can avoid these situations.
Let's do games tonight, and then we'll get kind of some of the league riff-raff news and notes.
Let's do it.
The Knicks are 5-point favorites tonight, man.
Yeah, I feel like they'll be annoying to win this.
I don't know. I
kind of want this series to be over, to be honest. I'm not having fun watching this Knicks team.
Hashtag things we say every single year.
No, but seriously, like, there were a lot of moments in this season where I think things were really overblown and really, like, overreactive with this Knicks team. And they were actually, I mean, I thought they were really fun to watch throughout most of the year, aside from a couple of lulls that most teams have. But this team is just, they're not playing like that. And it's not a live by the three, die by the three. Like, they've just... it's become really bad basketball. And maybe that's the Pacers' defense. Like, maybe that's just what they've been able to do. Like, because I do think they defend what the Knicks do really well.
It's both.
But there's something, like, I'm just not enjoying this. I kind of want it to be over. Not because I dislike the Knicks. I would love for this Knicks team to be successful, because I've defended Carmelo for a long time. Like, I like Carmelo Anthony as a player a lot. And I appreciate what he does on a basketball court, maybe incorrectly, but I do think that it's a very special thing. But I'm just kind of done with them.
I think it'll be interesting to see what attitude the Pacers bring, because they haven't been a team that, you know, we saw in game two, they haven't been a team that comes in with super killer authority when they haven't had a chance for like an early opportunity.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're like, nah, it's fine. We're going back to India. It would be great. Yeah, it'd be nice, but they don't come out 120% or whatever. They give opportunities, so I think it's possible that they don't respond here. But God, I just, you know, the Knicks don't have anything. They don't have Plan B. They don't have secondary options. They don't have. I mean, you know, is Carmelo scoring? No. Let's try running the pick and roll. Okay, I'm going to shoot the jumper off the pick and roll. Okay, that's not going in. I don't know. JR, you got any ideas?
Shoot! I'll shoot!
He's got to have a game, though. Right?
Yeah.
He's got to have a game. He can't. This can't. Not a contract here.
In you know, in totally unrelated analogies, I've had a hangover that's lasted 4 or 5 days before. Like, it's not often, but it's happened on occasion. I feel like JR's virus, his illness, you know, totally unrelated to what I just said, should probably be gone, and he can get through this and have a monster performance in MSG.
One of the worst I ever had was I was drinking Hypnotic.
That's your first mistake.
And then alternating that with a bottle of red wine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, and that one lasted a long time. This could be Hypnotic related.
Sure. The kids love it. I mean, they loved it in 2003. I don't know about now.
But, yeah. wow. Okay, so the line opened. Golden State Warriors were 1.5 favorite. They're now 1.5 dogs.
Ooh.
Whoa!
Ooh, that's a
3-point swing.
That's a big swing.
The money line opened at Spurs plus 100, and now it's Spurs minus 120.
Yeah, that's big.
I mean, it's obviously they think it's exceptionally tight.
I mean, it's just, do you believe
the money line's even on the Warriors?
Do you believe Curry is healthy enough to do what he does? I really don't. I don't like. I went back and watched Game 5 a bunch, and I hate the way he's moving. Like, he moves like he's in pain, and that's understandable because he probably is in pain, and I don't think he trusts his ankle right now, just based on watching him move. And yeah, I think that I like the Spurs in this one. I like him to close out.
Wow.
If he's healthy, I think they win. I think the Warriors win.
I just do not have a feel. I do not have a feel for it at all. Either way, it's not the. I just don't know. I can't get a lock on how the Warriors are going to respond, because they've responded in so many different ways in the playoffs.
Right. It's not just this one thing of like, all right, we got this play working again. Like, yeah. It's always something different.
The Warriors have not lost. Who won Game 4?
Warriors did.
All right, so the Warriors, and that's right, the Warriors lost Game 1.
Yeah.
So the Warriors still have not lost consecutive games in the playoffs yet.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to stick with the trend and I'll go Warriors.
Okay.
Just based off of that, because they haven't lost back-to-back games.
I actually like that about teams. I don't mind a... Yeah, I mean, this isn't the same because they did split, but some people get bored when it's just... taking care of home, but when it gets deeper into the series, like, I don't mind it. I don't mind the series dragging out a little bit.
Oh, well, we need one to go seven. We just do.
Yeah.
Our only seven game series has been the Nets.
That was
Bulls.
Awful.
Like, nobody deserved better than that.
Nobody enjoyed that. Even Bulls fans were like, oh, come on.
Come on. Yeah, so I'll take the Warriors because they have not lost yet. I'll take them, yeah.
Okay.
I'm very on the edge of it, because the other thing is, it's like, oh, hey, Manu Ginobili, but like, you don't know when Manu's going to disappear.
Yeah, that's true. And I do want this to go seven. I love watching this Warriors team. I love the matchup with them and the Spurs.
This has been the best series.
Yeah,
all.
It's been fascinating basketball.
This has been the best series of the playoffs.
And I've loved the coaching matchup. And, yeah. You know, I think Pop has been great. I think people need to get over the... whatever announcing issues they had with Mark Jackson. Like, he's a pretty good coach.
Well, he does have an unfair advantage, though, because God's on his side.
Well, sure, but, I mean, I don't know. This is turning into this unnecessary Tebow range where, yeah, okay, he talks about God. Like, get over it. He believes in it. If you don't believe in it like he believes in it, that's fine. Like, I don't, but I, like, this is what helps drive him as a player, clearly, and as a coach, and...
But it's his attitude, though, because he acts like, he's like, people don't want to admit it. Yes, you are correct, Mark. People do not want to admit that God has decided that he's going to take his interest in making sure the Golden State Warriors advance to the Western Conference Finals.
But why do you care if he feels that way?
I don't care that he feels that way. I care that he says it. There's
why? A lot of things like that. But why? Right? How does that affect anybody?
Because it's annoying. Don't say it. I just don't think there's a place for it.
Don't listen to it. You know what he's going to say. Don't listen to his press conference.
Yeah, fair enough.
I also don't like
his press conference because it's like, unless he's dropping something like that or calling out hitmen, like, he has terrible cliche responses, and then, like, he slips in just enough to where you have to pay attention.
Yeah, he's, I mean, that's, it's very head coachy of him.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Over under on points for Jesus, 22.5.
I don't think Tiago Splitter scores 22.5.
You know, just because of his size, it reminds me. When I went to, when I was getting married, the Catholic Church has you go through a series of marriage classes to, you know, understand your partner better and understand the values and some of the church stuff in there and just some good stuff. And I got quite a bit out of it. But in the room that we had it, you know, Catholics being big on the whole crucifix thing.
Yeah.
There was this crucifix, and there was this giant wooden crucifix that was a hand-carved statue, but the Jesus on it was like Herculean.
Oh.
He had these massively ripped, it was like The Rock.
Okay.
He had these massively ripped muscles, and he like kind of had like an angry look in his eye, so I started calling him Hulk Christ.
I wouldn't mind a Passion of the Christ remake with The Rock.
With The Rock.
That would be fun. Get some Paul Walker in there somehow.
Maybe we have to escape this conversation right now before we get fired.
I'm just talking movies here. I don't know what anybody else is talking about.
Right, just talking movies.
I'm just talking movies.
So a couple other things. Hey, the Kings.
Yeah.
Turns out trying to extort and pressure David Stern is not going to work out well for you.
It's weird that the Maloofs screwed up another thing. It's really weird. I never expected that.
And then he got chased into a closet.
Oh, that's the best. And then he lied. He blatantly lied. You're a liar, George Maloof. You're a liar. Sue me for libel. Sue me for slander. I don't care. You're a liar. Saying you tried to find Sacramento investors. You're a liar. It's ridiculous.
My favorite part was he got done and was still saying, I can sell to whoever I want to.
Yeah.
Like,
really? Because it seems like you want to sell to Chris Hansen. And it doesn't look like the league's going to allow that.
I had this idea yesterday, actually, and I think it's a great plan. The Maloofs really want to sell to the Kings and not sell to – or sell to the Seattle group and not sell to the Sacramento group.
Yeah.
Like, it's borderline petty at this point. And Chris Hansen and Steve Ballmer really want a team in Seattle. So sell them let them sell them the team. Just remove them from the NBA. And then we'll get an expansion franchise to Sacramento.
Yeah.
For all the money that Sacramento's put up.
Sure.
And the Sonics can come back. They won't have anyone to play against.
Right.
But they'll have a team again.
They get the old CBA up again. I know Isaiah's available to run it.
It can be like the Globetrotters.
Yeah. Actually, DeMarcus Cousins on the Globetrotters would be great.
That would be pretty great. The supersonic Globetrotters.
Yeah. It was hilarious. And, I mean, when David Stern says, will this vote effectively ended that purchase agreement with the Hansen Bomber Group, that's probably your hint that you can't just sell to anybody you want.
Yeah, probably not a good sign.
Yeah.
I like that Silver came out and basically said, look, when the new TV deal gets arranged, we're going to push for expansion.
Yeah, because there's going to be a lot more money. And you can take that kind of hit.
And there's still going to be an ugly debate about it.
Sure.
But I think that you're going to have a little bit more public support. Because now people really are like, well, we like the Thunder where they're at because the fan base is awesome, and that's worked out really well. But we really want a team back in Seattle, and we didn't want the Kings to move.
Right.
And if we, you know, we don't want to dilute the league, but we're kind of okay with this. I think you're going to see a swing more towards expansion because of those kind of concerns. You're still going to have a lot of people, particularly in several markets on the various coasts, that say that it's a terrible idea because they want to contract and have more top talent. But,
right.
I think you're going to get a little bit more support for the idea of expansion in the coming years.
I agree, and I wish they could get to it sooner, because it just seems like that's the most fair way for everyone involved to get what they want. Because I do want a team in Seattle. I just don't want the Kings in Seattle. And it would be nice if they could go, hey, 2 years, you'll have an expansion team. But from a business standpoint, it's smart to wait until the next TV deal. I don't think it's ideal, but I understand the decision.
Yeah. What was I going to say? So friend of the program, Bo Cherney, who writes for the Hawks blog on ESPN True Hoop Network.
Hawkshoop.com.
Hawkshoop.com. I'm still trying to get past like all these new blogs. Cause I'm like, or Brett Legree and Hoopinion. He wrote a great article about Al Horford, about how Al Horford needs to shoot more threes.
Yeah.
And Al Horford retweeted it, and everyone, it was the talk of the internet yesterday, and it was a very great piece, and Bo's a very promising young writer. I thought it was interesting because he was talking about how Korver drew so much attention for them last year.
Yeah.
Korver's expressed a lot of interest in coming back. What would you pay if you're the Hawks for Korver to get him back?
I'd give him around 7 to 8 a year.
Okay. That sounds a little high for what I usually hear from you for most things, but it makes a little bit of sense.
I think Korver is one of those guys who's proven, one, people think he's a terrible defender. I think he's a terrible man defender. I think he's a really good team defender.
Right.
And I think he has been since he was in Utah. And I just think that his, what he does on the court and the amount of attention, like, I've watched a lot of teams look terrified when he's moving around. And he moves. So, like, there's one thing to be a good spot-up shooter. Like, Steve Novak is a great spot-up shooter. To be able to be a spot-up shooter while coming off curls and coming off screens and moving the baseline and everything, the way Korver does it is terrifying. I mean, it really is terrifying. When they were in town against the Wolves ended up pulling the game out, I believe. But there were moments in the second half where he would move, and the way they used screens to get him open and stuff, it just didn't seem like there was anything you could do. It was very Curry-esque in the way he moved off the ball. And I think that effect, especially with where the league is headed, you know, J.J. Redick comes out and says he wants $10 million a year, and I think that's ridiculous. But if J.J. got 7 or 8, like, I think you can live with that. I wouldn't want it over a 4-year deal, but I think you can live with that for 2 or 3 years. And I would definitely give Korver like 3 years, $22 million.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. I really like a lot of what he does. He was actually better defensively this year.
Yeah, I think he's a decent, really decent defender in terms of the overall package. And the idea here's something that I actually struggle with. People want every player to become a complete player.
Yeah,
and it's just not realistic. It's rare. I mean, so rare. Even Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson couldn't really shoot from the outside, right?
Yeah.
Michael Jordan couldn't shoot from the outside. Like, he wasn't a three-point shooter at all. It's so rare to have a talent where you feel comfortable with them doing everything on the floor. And you expect it. That's the big thing, is the expectation for them to do everything on the floor. And so when a big man is good, it's like, oh, if he got a three-point shot, that'd be great. And it's like, well, I don't understand why he would do that. You look at Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh is a terrible three-point shooter. He shot 28% this year. And people are like saying, oh, he added that to his game. No, he didn't. He's taking more of them, but it's not a good addition. Like, he's a terrible three-point shooter. Serge Ibaka shot like 35%, primarily shot from the corners. I'm okay with that, and I think that's how I would like Horford to add the three-point shot, because he is such a good shooter from mid-range and long twos. If he takes the majority of his shots from either the corner threes or the top of the key three, if he avoids the wing threes, then I think it's a good idea for him to improve his game. I don't want him taking four a game, but if he took one or two a game and just kept that in the back of the defensive mind, I think it's a good addition, and especially with him as a player.
And the last thing I want to ask about was, the last thing I wanted to do is just to get your thoughts on this. This is a quote from Dwayne Wade last night.
Oh, boy.
It was on the floater that Wade hit. Shane set an unbelievable screen on Rip, where I was able to come off and had the chance and ability to make more than one move because my defender wasn't right on me. Here it is. And knowing the kind of defender Carlos Boozer is, I was able to make a shot. And that's about, he's not going to, jump up in the air and sky and how Boozer plays position. But just the...
That's perfect.
I really kind of love that. That's one of those I want to bronze it and put it on a wall. Knowing the kind of defender Carlos Boozer is, I was able to make a shot.
I kind of want that to be on Carlos Boozer's tombstone someday.
The Amnesty Boozer, sir?
Nah. I looked at that in the series in review of, the look ahead for Chicago. And if you Amnesty Boozer, you have more flexibility, but you don't have cap room, necessarily. I mean, it depends on where the BRI is going to end up and all that, but you most likely don't have cap room to sign somebody. And then you have an expiring with Luol Deng for next season, and so you can move him, and that's how you can start bringing in new talent. And personally, I don't think Taj Gibson is a starter yet. He's a bad offensive player. And so I wouldn't feel comfortable giving him, the starter role. I think he's perfect off the bench. And I don't mean that to, disparage him. I just think some guys are better suited off the bench. He would be one of my top three guys to pick for that six-man role if I could, build a team. And I love what he does, but I think it's better in a reserve role. And so... the emergence of Jimmy Butler makes Deng expendable and all that, but then I start looking at, all right, you get rid of Boozer, you get rid of, you trade Deng for role players, and now you're left with Jimmy Butler and whatever role players you can bring in to surround Noah and Rose. And that's not a bad idea. But then I look at, or you could just have Boozer, Deng, and Jimmy Butler together like you had this year and add Derrick Rose to everything. And I think you have one more with the expiring of Deng, you could amnesty Boozer next year. I just think that I would go one more year with this core. And I don't know, it's probably not a title contender because we don't know how Rose is going to be and we know how good the Heat are. But I just don't see the how it benefits them in terms of building a team for next season. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Would you?
No, I think that I wait just because I don't. Part of it is I don't see anybody out there that I can get. Look at 2009 when they pushed the Celtics.
Yeah.
And the same thing in 2010. There was a very glaring hole where it was they don't have a post scorer. They need somebody that can score in the post.
Right.
That was a big problem for them. You have to have that. And it's not that this the league is still going small. There's going to be a huge overreaction because people are going to say the Grizzlies and Pacers are in the playoffs and that means – or in the conference finals if the Pacers were to win. And that's because – and that proves that the small ball thing isn't as effective as it says. But it's like, well, no. There's lots of teams that have good post players, but they're not here. The Grizzlies and Pacers are there because they're the best defenses in the NBA.
Right.
It helps, but let's slow down a little bit there. So they need to be able to get a guy that can score in the post and the options for them in free agency. And honestly, overall, it's hard to find those guys. Those guys at this point are really difficult to discover. It's what makes Memphis exceptional is they have two.
Yeah. And it's why the Lakers were so good for a while is because Bynum and Power, two of the only guys that did that.
Yeah. If you look through the list of them, it's like the options. You can't get anybody in free agency. If you can't get anybody in free agency, if you clear a room, then the idea is, well, you can trade Deng for one and put Jimmy Butler in, and that's good. I think we're – here's my problem. I feel I'm very confident that Jimmy Butler – that I am correct that we do not need to overreact to Jimmy Butler's postseason.
Right.
I'm also very confident he's going to turn into that guy that's going to validate this, and then I'm going to look like an idiot. Same thing happened with James Harden, so I can't, like...
Well, the thing is, like, it's like, yeah, Jimmy Butler could just move in and take Deng's spot. It's like, yeah, or you could have them both for a year and make scoring on the perimeter a pain in the ass.
The only thing with me is I want LaVall to go somewhere really cushy so he gets to, like, score 17 a game, guard the second-best defender, and just have a nice, comfortable life. It's like a retirement package.
I know that in 2 years ago, in Rubio's rookie year, I heard from multiple people that Luol Deng was like, I love being in Chicago, but it would be fun to play with Ricky Rubio somehow. And ever since then, I've been like, in an expiring year, I would love Luol Deng on the Timberwolves.
Exactly.
Would they be like, let's get Jerry Reinsdorf drunk, offer him up, Kirilenko for Deng, done deal. They can even have J.J. Barea. And then you re-sign Nate Robinson, you have the J.J. Barea, Nate Robinson backcourt.
Or Zach, we could do what the internet does in its entirety. Kevin Love for Luol Deng.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
See, there's the postcard that they need.
Because someone's talked about it before. Someone's written about it before, so it must be on the brink.
Man, I swear I will stop. Someone suggested to me that, they're going to trade for Kevin Love, or they should trade for Kevin Love.
Does Flip Saunders know this?
And when someone says that to me, I'm always like, but that's idiotic. And I'm like, well, I don't want to deal with this. I was like, here, I'll just send it to Zach, and Zach will destroy them. And then it turns into like a 15-thread conversation.
I know.
And I'm like, well, I didn't want this. I just wanted Zach to make fun of you, and we can move on.
Like, I know I'm a jerk, and I accept that, and people, so there are a lot of people that don't like that about me, and it's fine, but it's just an easier way of me saying, like, if I respond to you in a really jerky way, it's not really an invitation for a conversation. It's just me letting you know how stupid I think you are, and you can think I'm equally as stupid or more so, and I'm fine with that, but that's where it can end. Like, we don't need to discuss it. You can just say, hey, well, I think you're an idiot. I'm like, okay, cool. That's fine. I also think I'm an idiot. Conversation's over.
Interesting question. Let's say they trade Deng to make space and they amnesty Boozer.
Yes.
Is Al Jefferson an upgrade or a downgrade?
Ooh.
Ooh, right?
Ooh.
Right?
That's
the exception here. Is Al Jefferson.
It's a little awkward, but a Jefferson Noah big court.
Yeah.
That's something I like.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm all for this now. I don't know that it makes them better, but I want to watch it.
The only thing that would be better is if they actually traded Boozer and then Utah took Carlos Boozer back.
Or
riot.
That's just so they can eat in their own in their own sorrows. What if we just traded David Lee and Carlos Boozer? Let's just swap those guys.
Oh God! See what happens. Oh God! Oh God!
Oh God! Bulls fans will be like, "All right, finally we got rid of Boozer. Hey, what the hell is this David Lee doing?" And there would just be way too much chest hair for the Bay Area.
Yo, man. So much. Imagine they re-signed Jack to a huge contract and they had Carlos Boozer and then Stephen Curry just sitting on the corner.
He would never touch the ball again.
Just sitting on the corner.
He would effectively have become like Eddie House. He would have to shoot the ball immediately.
You'd have to handcuff Ethan to like a bathroom, like a towel rack. Like he's a wolf man during games.
Oh, he would. Yeah, actually, I kind of want that to happen just to see what his reaction will be.
Okay. So you like Knicks and Spurs. I like Warriors and Pacers.
This is how you hedge.
There you go.
One of us will be right.
Ties all around. We got some good stuff for you today. A lot of reaction to last night's games. We'll have stuff on tonight, obviously, coming up. We'll have continuing coverage of all the coaching searches and all that stuff out. You can follow Zach at Talk Hoops. I'm at Matt Moore CBS. Follow us at Ion Basketball. And follow at CBS Sports, because they pay us.
Yeah.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.